Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to do it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, soap star turned poker pro, Team Poker Stars pro, Chad Brown, plus John Pappas, the executive director of the Poker Players Alliance, with an update on the impending implementation of the UIGEA just 2 weeks ago. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's alongside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, and we are just back from a weekend in Connecticut. A couple of weeks ago, when St. Louis hosted its first ever circuit event, one of the pros who came to town here was Bernard Lee, who is the host of ESPN.com's Inside Deal and a poker player and poker radio host himself. He's also the spokesperson for Foxwoods Resort Casino in Connecticut, and he said, you know, I came to your casino, why don't you come to mine? And so we did, and we had a terrific weekend up there, didn't we?
Oh, it was absolutely great. I've never been to Foxwoods before. The place is huge.
Yep.
I'm telling you, it must encompass about three states up there when you keep walking from end to end. But we had a good time, played some poker, made a little. Congratulations, by the way, on your 11th place finish.
Thank you. Yeah, we played in two events up there as part of their Mega Stacks Challenge. That's what Bernie invited us for. One of them was last Thursday, Thursday and Friday for me, because I made it to the second day of this $560 buy-in with 415 people in it, and made it down to 11th place. And that was a, you know, another nice cash for me.
It was. I made it to 80-something or whether, and, you know, short stack the whole time, but I got to cheer you on a little bit, and you did a very, very good job.
Thank you very much. That's my fourth cash in eight events this year. If I could just keep that going, I could be broke by Labor Day.
Okay, well, if you're doing it every other one, make sure if you cash right before the World Series, you do some little one in between.
That's right. I want to do that. And we will be going to the World Series in about a week and a half. The 2010 World Series of Poker will be out there as we were last year in the Dennis Phillips Suite at the Rio, high atop the World Series venue. And we'll interview a whole bunch of pros while we're out there and bring you coverage of that. We also both played in the main event at Foxwoods, the 1650 buy-in on Saturday and Sunday and Monday. Neither of us made it into the money there. In fact, the only one of us, of our group, who made it into day two was Kevin Schaffel, who you became friends with after he
was,
like you in 2008, he became a November Niner last year in 2009. And we had a great time hanging out with him, too.
Oh, absolutely. Great poker player. That's his third cash in the main event out there. People didn't realize him beforehand. But he's got a pretty good game, and he played very well out there.
While we were at Foxwoods, we recorded an extended session with both Bernie and Kevin, because all three of them have gone very deep in the main event, Bernie, Kevin, and Dennis, of course. And with the World Series now just a week and a half away, on next week's show, you will hear all three of them talking about preparations that you should make before you go and play in the World Series this year, whether it's the main event or the 1K event or anything in between. You'll hear a lot of that that we recorded this weekend on next week's show. Now, let's talk about a couple of the hands that we ran into this weekend. One of them in my 560 event, where I made the run to 11th place, was the only hero call I made all weekend long. And it was at a table with one kind of loose cannon on day two.
I think you need to qualify what a hero call is.
Okay.
It's where you have far, far, far from the nuts, but you just think that the other guy is weaker, and you make that call with bottom pair or whatever it happens to be.
Second pair in my case.
Right.
There was a loose cannon at the table who had kind of been running over some people by essentially making big moves on them for a lot of chips, or quite often he was moving all in because he was the big stack at the table and he was throwing his weight around.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get involved in any hands with him until this one, where I had called him. I was on the button. He had raised preflop, as he often had, and one other caller had gotten in there. and I called him with the ace nine of hearts, a hand that I would normally not get involved in, but I thought if I can get involved in it heads up with this guy eventually, if I catch cards here, there's a chance that I could get some chips.
Did you have position behind him?
I was on the button. He was in middle position.
Okay, perfect.
The flop came out queen nine. You know what? I take it back. I apologize. I was the big blind.
Oh, okay.
I was the big blind, so I did not have position on him, but I called for a three-way flop, ace nine of hearts. Again, thinking if I hit something here, even if I hit an ace, this guy could be raising with anything in middle position. I may be able to do something here. So the flop came out queen, nine, three, with two clubs. And I looked at the flop for a couple of seconds, and then I checked. He instantly, and I mean instantly, before I even got the D in checked out of my, before the K came out in check, came out of my mouth, I'm all in. That's how fast he shoved, which, as you know, is a little bit of a tell.
Yeah.
But I'm playing with a loose cannon who could be making this move with who knows what. I mean, it was hard to get a read on him. So I sat there and I thought for a while. And I kind of reviewed in my mind hands I'd seen him play before. He and I hadn't tangled yet, but he'd had tangled with some other people. And I did remember a hand about an hour and a half earlier where a guy had called him, and the guy wasn't even on a draw. He was just on two overcards to the board and had moved all in and had doubled up a short stack then. And remembering that hand, I thought to myself, my second pair is probably good here. But it was for all of my chips. And so I had to think a little bit more about whether I wanted to do this. Do I want to make this call with second pair? Because if I had a queen, I'm absolutely calling.
Mm-hmm.
If I have jack 10, I'm absolutely calling on a queen 9-3 board. But I have two hearts in my hand. There are no hearts on the board. All I have is second pair. And I thought about it and thought about it. And finally I said, I call. I also didn't like the way he was looking across the table. He seemed a little bit nervous. And I make the call. And he turns over king six.
Without clubs.
No clubs.
Ugh. Never mind.
So he's got one over card.
Yeah.
Which doesn't come, and I double through him.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up making a nice run there. He actually managed to, once he got moved to another table, which most of us at my table were not happy about, because we wanted a loose cannon at the table, once he moved to another table, he was able to last, I think, to about 20th or 21st place, so he ended up in the money. But it was one of those situations that you run into in a tournament where too many people, I think, and I've been guilty of this myself in the past, act too quickly. You know, that guy moves all in, and they either call immediately or they fold immediately. This was a situation where I had to think about it before making that decision. Does the story add up? Annie Duke talked about that when we had her on the show. You got to think about what story is this guy telling, and does it make sense?
Yeah. And you get somebody like a Chris Ferguson who never acts fast. In fact, it can almost be irritating at the table how slow he acts.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he thinks about every hand, thinks about every bet, always takes a few seconds.
Yep.
You can't get a tell on him that way.
Yep.
You're absolutely right. An insta call like that, or an instant shove, sorry, not call, shove, is a sign of weakness normally.
Yep, and it certainly was in this case. Although, again, with a loose cannon, you never really know. You can never be 100% sure, which is why that thought process has to
I would have worried a little bit about a club draw there, basically. Mm-hmm. He's shoving on a semi-bluff. He has absolutely nothing now, but he's got nine outs on the turn in the river.
He could have jack 10 there for the straight draw, or he could have two clubs for the club draw. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it blanked off. The third club didn't come anyway, so I would have been safe. But, you know, that doubled, and that helped me get all the way down to 11th place. In 15th place, by the way, I made a horrible play against the chip leader with a pair of sevens on a king-queen-three flop and an ace turn, where I shoved representing the ace, and I'm sorry, I didn't shove. I raised him. He bet. I raised. He shoved. And I don't care how good a poker player you are and how many hero calls you made in your life, no one's calling with a pair of sevens against the chip leader when he shoves with an ace, king, queen, three on the board.
Well, they can make the call. They then go to lunch, but, you know, they make the call. So.
Yeah, I didn't make the call, and I was wounded by that and ended up only in 11th place.
And again, I don't think that's that bad of a call, especially if you were a little semi-short stack and you're trying to make it to the final table.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he doesn't have the ace there,
mm-hmm.
he should give you some respect. I assume you had a decent image at the table. So
yeah.
You know, if he didn't have an ace, I'm thinking he'll probably lay, or two pair or set or some, who knows what.
After
jacked in, I don't care.
After I folded, he showed me a queen. So
okay. I'm surprised he called with a queen that quickly.
Well, it might have been
shoved.
Well, he had raised preflop. It might have been king queen. Might have been ace queen. I don't know. All he showed me was a queen.
Oh, okay. I'm guessing he had a decent card with it.
Could have been two queens. He could have flopped a set. I don't know. Whatever it was, my pair of sevens was out of two people, I was in 11th place.
There you go. Okay.
Anyway, hands that you played this weekend?
Oh, I played a number of really good ones. I'll pick one in particular. Mike Zagaritz was set to my right for about a day, and then actually I ran into him on another table after we got split apart and then back together again. Very, very solid player. Played with him a lot. Had a lot of respect back and forth. We had a hand here, and the reason why I want to bring this hand up, it's one of those hands, if you're not careful, you can go broke with. Either one of us could have on it, and it was just kind of a crazy type of a hand on that. He was under the gun. Blinds were 1 and 2, and he raised it to 600. I looked at pocket jacks. I've got the entire table behind me to act. If I smooth call here, I for sure probably will have either the big blind or the small blind in, maybe both of them. Button could make a call there with just a suited ace or something. I don't want a five-handed flop here with pocket jacks, frankly. I re-raised it to 15. Folded all the way around to him. He took a second, and he called. So, I mean, I put him on a decent hand. I'm not sure what it is. Aces or kings, I think he would come back at me on it. Something from pocket sixes lower, he probably would fold because I have position behind him. But good, solid player, so let's see what happens. Flops an ace, queen, 10 out there. All right.
Ace, queen, 10, you've got pocket jacks.
Yes.
Okay.
He checks. Now think about this for a minute. You saw the range of hands I put him on.
Yeah.
If he has any ace, ace, king, ace, queen, ace, jack, ace, 10, I'm beat.
Yep.
If he has king, queen, I'm beat. If he has a pocket pair, queens, tens, I'm beat.
Yes.
The only two hands that I could beat that I feel safe with on him are pocket nines and pocket eights.
Correct.
Okay. I'm not throwing chips out there to hope he has one of those two hands. So I went ahead and checked. Okay. Miracle of miracles, a king comes on the turn.
Beautiful.
Oh, it is awesome. He checks again.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. I bet out $3,200 into about a $4,000 pot. He thought for a second and he called.
Okay,
I'm going, well, wow, two pair maybe, I don't know for sure, he's got something pretty solid.
The fact that he thought for a second, you know he doesn't have the Broadway straight like you do.
Correct.
He wasn't on ace-jack because he's probably going to raise there.
Right.
Okay.
You would think so, because he would try to get enough money in the pot that we could do with shoving it on the river.
So what do you put him on at that point?
I put him on, frankly, two over cards on it. Ace, king, king, queen, something like that on it. Pretty solid hand, something he's got a chance to draw to because then he's looking at it. He also has a gut shot.
All right.
So, see what happens on it. River's another king.
Okay.
Now he checks again. So now think on this. I re-raised him pre-flop. He smooth called. He checks the flop. He checks the turn. He calls my raise. Then he checks the river. I am not putting a dime in this pot. I can't beat anything now except basically,
if he has ace king, now he's got kings full of aces.
Yes.
If he has ace queen, he still has two pair, but you don't know.
Yeah.
He's
probably not calling my bet. So the only thing I could do by throwing out there is try and get a value bet if I thought I have it ahead, or a bluff if I think I can drive him off.
But then what do you do if he pops you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I checked. And I turned over my jacks. He looked at me and grinned from ear to ear and turned over pocket queens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had flopped the set.
Yes.
Slow played it and backdoored his way into a full house.
Yeah. Well, I got lucky on the turn. He got lucky on the river. He had 10 outs. Not real luck. I mean, it's a good solid play.
Yep.
For the 3,200 out there, he didn't quite have pot odds with the 10 outs, but it wasn't far from it. And if he does catch something, there's a good chance he can get a value bet or a something or other on the river there on it. And then he looked at me and said, if I'd have made any bet on the river, would you have called it? And I said, not a dime.
Really?
I'm telling you, you give me a nickel, I want change back. So
you kind of lost the minimum there with only one turn bet.
That's what we kind of figured out is we both played it fairly well.
Yeah.
I checked when he had the better hand. I bet when I had the better hand. I checked when he had the better hand.
Yeah.
It played out very well. Nice, solid one. But I'm telling you, so many of the young guns you're talking about would have been back and forth. The chips would have been in there at some stage. Not for sure where.
Yep.
It would have either been bluffing or whatever on it. And a ton of chips would have been in that pot.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
And there's no reason for that.
Let me tell you about another hand from the main event at Foxwoods this weekend. At the very first table I sat down at, it was the only table I played all day because it was a table where when you're in a tournament and tables break, they tend to break them from one corner of the room first, and then it ends up in the last corner of the room, and I was in that last corner at table three. They were breaking from the higher number table to the lower number tables, and I was at three, so that meant I was going to play at this table all day long if I made it all day long.
Sort of like when I was up at the BC Classic in Vancouver. I got table one, seat one. I don't think I was moving anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
The only way, place you're going to move off that is either to the final table or out of the room.
There
Those are the
go.
Only two choices. There was a real loose cannon at my table who was an absolute luck box. I have never seen somebody run this well in a tournament for 6 hours. Every hand this guy played, he caught cards. And I'm not talking about starting with big starting hands. I'm talking about he would catch cards with King 8 offsuit. He would catch cards with Jack 6 suited. He would catch cards over and over and over again against everybody at the table. He's running up chips like crazy. Now, there's another guy at the other end of the table who's only got about 20,000 in chips. And the blinds are 100, 200. And it comes to this guy, and he means to call the bet by throwing out two black chips, but instead accidentally throws out one black chip and one gray $5,000 chip. The dealer immediately announces, raise, $5,100. And I was looking at the guy, and I saw by his reaction to what the dealer said that it was a mistake, that it wasn't some angle shot like you see some people doing in some events. This guy made a mistake. I'm thinking to myself immediately, if I have any kind of decent hand here, I'm going to put this guy all in because he's going to fold that $5,100 because he only has a $200 hand.
Yeah.
Comes around to me. Nobody calls him. Comes around to me. I look down at deuce three offsuit. Not the kind of hand I'm going to make a move on, so I fold. It comes back around to the luck box. He looks at his two cards. He calls. Nobody else calls. They're two-handed. The flop comes out 10 high, something like 10-7-3. The first guy looks back at his... I'm sorry, it was 10-9-3. First guy looks back at his cards, has 15,000 left. I'm all in, he says.
So there's 10,000 plus in the pot.
He's got 15,000. He's all
in. And he's
in.
Against the deep stack.
He's against the way chip leader of the whole tournament, this luck box.
Okay.
Who immediately says, I call. I mean, immediately says, I call. They turn over their hands. The first guy has the queen 10 of hearts.
Top pair, queen kicker.
The luck box has queen 10 of spades. They end up chopping the hand.
Right.
The reason I bring it up is, talk about being a luck box. You called in a 100-200 blind hand a 5,100 bet with queen 10 suited and ended up chopping the pot. That's when you know you're the luck box of the tournament. Of course, the other thing you know about a guy who plays like that is he's not going to make it to day two. And he didn't. In fact, he wasn't there much after dinner.
I guess the polite thing to say is his chips are in play.
His chips were big time in play.
All right.
One other hand I have to tell you about from a cash game on Sunday night, and then we'll bring in Chad Brown, and later on we'll talk with John Pappas from the PPA. One other hand from a 5-10 game I played Sunday night at Foxwoods. I had started out with about 1,000, bought in short, and I chipped my way up to 2,000 after just a couple of hours. And we were only playing 6 or 7 handed at the table. And it's 5-10, and three people have limped into the pot ahead of me, and the button calls, and I'm in the big blind, and I look down at my hand, and I call. So we're 5-handed, and the flop comes out 8-8-8. I check, the next guy checks, the next guy checks, guy at the other end of the table bets 50. The button folds, I call, fold behind us. 150 in the pot, 3-8s on the board. The turn is the 6 of diamonds. I check. He checks. The river is the ace of clubs. I now bet 150. He almost instantly makes it 500. I think to myself, what's going on here? I react as if I'm surprised at the move he's made, and I say out loud to him, are you making a move on me with the ace or the eight? He kind of smiles, looks down at his cards, and turns over one of his cards, the 7 of diamonds. I immediately announce all in for the other 2,000 I have in front of me. He insta-calls me, and I turn over the 4th 8. How often do you flop quads and get paid?
Never happens.
Not very often.
Never.
But when you think about what he did, raising my 150 to 500, obviously, yeah. He's representing that he has an ace like I do, but He's also trying to represent the eight, putting me on an ace and representing an eight himself. That's hard to do when the other guy has all the eights.
Did you get his name and number? Can we invite him to St. Louis?
His name and number was slink back in his chair and not play a hand for about 40 minutes after that. All right, I'm Paul Harris. He's Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. Another member of Team Poker Stars will join us in a moment. That's Chad Brown. Let's talk a little bit about Poker Stars. Not only was Dennis playing live with me this weekend at the Foxwoods event, along with Bernie Lee and Kevin Schaffel, but you also played the Scoop on Sunday.
Yes, I did.
That was the big finale, right?
It was. There are 38 events in the Scoop. This was the final one, the $10,000 buy-in. Each of these 38 events had a low, medium, and high. In that particular one, it was a $100, $1,000, or a $10,000 buy-in, which one you win. The high was guaranteed a $5 million purse, and they beat it. So over $6 million in the purse, over $1 million for first prize. In fact, for the whole series there of this on PokerStars, they had guarantees wrapped together of $47 million. In actuality, they got over $63 million
nice
put into this thing.
And congratulations to Ryan Fair, who won the Scoop $10,000 main event on Sunday. $1.1 million prize there. There was no deal with the guy in second place. They played it out, and he took it down.
Yeah, it's unreal. They had, I think, over 120 countries represented. They had over 400,000 people buy in to these different events in this thing. It was just unbelievable on that. Three of the team pro guys made it to the in the money in there in the final thing. I went out 55th. I think Jason Mercier went out 39th, and Angel, a gentleman from Mexico, another team pro player, he went out 15th, I think, on it.
Yeah.
So we're fairly well represented. In fact, the first table of it, Chad and I were on the same table.
Is that right?
For a while, yeah.
Yeah.
He got a little bit of a cooler, got flush over flush and crippled him, so... Anyhow, it's a good event, great thing. PokerStars, again, a rousing success. Can you imagine that? Over 400,000 people in that tournament over that two-week period.
If you're not playing on PokerStars, you should be, because you can get into all of these things for free by going to PokerStars.net. Download the software, give it a shot, and play against all of these Team PokerStars Pro. We'll be right back with more of the final table from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to The Final Table. We're here in Harrah's. Here there's a ruffle of the chips and everything behind us. I got a nice little tournament going on. Anyhow, our guest today is Chad Brown. He's another member of the Team Poker Stars group, and he's racked up over $3 million in tournament winnings. He has 27 caches at the WSOP, one final table at the WPT, a final table at an EPT. He also has had an acting career, including a role on the soap opera Another World, and he hosted for 2 years the Ultimate Poker Challenge on TV. Last year was a pretty good year for Chad. Not only did he have three first-place finishes over a six-week span, starting down there at the Beau Rivage and Caesar's Palace, but he also married Vanessa Russo. Hey, Chad, welcome to the final table.
Hey, Dennis, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'll tell you what, how'd you enjoy Monte Carlo first?
Oh, well, you know, I like Monte Carlo. I always enjoy going to Monte Carlo. You know, I think even the richest people in the world are get a little pissed off of how much they charge for water, but other than that, you know, Monte Carlo is a lovely place.
It's amazing. I made the mistake of ordering room service one night, and I was in the middle of a tournament, ran up there to grab a sandwich. Ordered a cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else. Cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
37 euros.
Which is like 45 bucks?
Well, it's 1.3, so it's closer to 50.
Wow.
Okay. And it didn't include the tip. Yeah. Yeah, you got a good point there, Chad. Beware if you go to Monte Carlo. That was the one and only time. I went on instant diet in Monte Carlo.
Hey, Chad.
Yeah, you know, even like I said, the majority of the people there are millionaires. But even the, you know what it is? It's that people, even if they could afford it, it doesn't even, it's like a drop in the bucket for them. You know, people don't like to feel like they're being taken advantage of. And that's the only downside with Monte Carlo. I think a lot of people feel like, man, they're just raping us because they just know, you know, the money doesn't mean anything. But still, people don't like to be feel like they're being taken advantage of.
Yep.
I think it's an absolute point there. I mean, it's a gorgeous place. You're right on the Mediterranean, beautiful weather. You couldn't ask for more scenic. I went up in the mountains once and looked over the sea in the Mediterranean. It was just gorgeous. But, yeah, paying that much for a hamburger, not going to happen again.
I'm curious, when you go out to dinner in Monte Carlo, you and Vanessa are together. Does who pays for dinner depend on who's doing better in the tournament that day?
No. It doesn't. When we go out to dinner, I always pick up the tab for the most part. I mean, on an occasion, Vanessa will just like say, hey, you know what, I want to get the tab, you know, just to throw in like once in a while. But yeah, when we go out to dinner, you know, it's not for, pretty much. I mean, in our relationship, you know, our home bills and stuff. You know, we're like any other married couple and split the bills. But you know, Vanessa likes to feel like the lady being courted, so it's more of a romantic thing for her.
Well, you hit a home run there, I'll have to admit. I've met Vanessa, played with her several times. She is definitely one heck of a lady.
Yeah.
So I'm a little jealous, the same as about a few million other people here in the U.S.
So let's talk about some poker
here.
Yeah,
okay, sorry.
The WSOP 2010 starts up next week, and one of the first events is going to be the 50K Players Championship, which is an 8-game mix. I know you specialize in playing mixed games. Will you be in that?
I will be in that. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, let's have a little history for all of your listeners. You know, how the mixed games became popular, and this is just my opinion. This is not in a history book. When I started playing poker and cash games in L.A., you know, pretty much the game that was the big game that was being played every day was 7-card stud. Well, you know. There's a lot of top pros in the game, but there's a lot of, you know, business people who are very poor players. And the players, eventually, the bad players start to get a clue. And they're still not good, but they become a lot better. Someone, and I don't remember if there was a particular person that was clever who did this, someone winds up suggesting, hey, let's add another game. This will be fun. And they're doing this for the pure purpose of getting the amateurs another game in there, which they have no clue about, but they're just there to have fun and just gamble. And I think along the way, we wound up, you know, getting it up to horse, which was the game that was being played in many casinos, not on a regular basis, but, you know, that would be a game that, you know, because there are a lot of pros who are actually good players in a lot of the games, but there's a couple of games that they're a little weaker in, and the other pros who feel that they're good in all the games know that and then are willing to play in the game with them. So horse became the big buy-in tournament at the World Series of Poker, and, you know, of course, ESPN televised. That's the year Chip Reese won the bracelet in the horse event, and then they didn't televise it again because they did it when Scotty Wynn won, and that was the last year that they did it because, you know, the year that Chip won, they did No Limit Hold'em. All people complained, you know, that, well, that's not horse, you know. It's horse up until you get to the final table, then it's No Limit Hold'em. So then they did horse with Scotty and ESPN. That was the last time they televised it. They just felt, I guess, that it wasn't good TV because a lot of people didn't understand the game. And last year, when we had the horse tournament, you know, we didn't get a big turnout because it wasn't televised. And this year they're doing the 8-game mix, and with the committee, I don't know. I think Dennis, you're on one of the. Are you one of the people on the WSOP committee for the tournament?
No, I'm not this year. I've talked to several people about it, but I'm not officially on it. No.
So I think Daniel's one of them that's
yes,
on it. Howard Lederer, and so they agreed to let's do the 8-game mix this year, 50K, and have the final table be No Limit Texas Hold'em, which ESPN is happy to televise. So this is, well, you know, I'm really excited about this, and, you know, I really expect a really big turnout because it's going to be televised. And on PokerStars, and I had told a lot of people that expect a month before the World Series on PokerStars for their 8-game mix to really start getting a lot of players. Well, we've had, like for the most part for the whole year, there'd be one 100 game on occasions, one for an 800 game. Well, I'll tell you what, we've had like four 100, 200 games going, four and 800 games going, and the players are just rolling out, you know, coming in to really try and prep for the 50K eight-game Knicks. And I believe that even after the 50K is over, when the World Series is over, I think this could become, you know, one of the staple items on PokerStars.
No, I think you're exactly right on a couple of points there. You bring up some valuable points. ESPN doesn't want to televise something where people don't understand the games, and a lot of people don't understand some of the other games. They understand the no-limit hold'em.
Yep.
So what you do is you play all the preliminary rounds, you get down to the final table, and then you play the no-limit. That's kind of a compromise.
Yeah.
Granted, it's not true horse or anything like that, but people can at least understand it. It satisfies ESPN, and they can show some of the highlights previous to it. One thing here, we had Jennifer Harmon on here a few weeks ago, and she started talking about the mixed games they have there in Doyle's room. And she mentioned that they're now up to 10 to 12 different games that they play there in Bobby's room.
Is that, again, to throw people off, to throw off new players?
Well, it's not. See, in Bobby's room, the people who are playing in that are all world-class players. So what, you know, like let's say if I was one of the people that played in there, and I'm not. The highest game that I ever played, which they play in Bobby's room, is a 1-in-2000 game, and I would only play that game, and it actually is usually during the World Series. You know, like my personal cash game, the way I address it is, I'm not going in there with an ego. If the game is not good, I'm not going to play it just because it's the highest game that's going. I'm going to play it if I see that, wow, I'm a pretty big favorite in this game. Obviously, the lineup in Bobby's room that Jennifer Harmon plays in are, like, you know, the best players in the world. But obviously, each player who's playing there feels that one or two of the other players don't play a couple of the games that well. So what they try and do is they may, in the games that they know these other players all play well, you know, play a lot tighter and wait to exploit the weaker players in the one or two or three games that they feel that they don't play that well. So for the purpose that they're adding more games means that some of the players feel like, all right, the people who are weak in, let's say, stud eight or better, you know, they've finally picked up on the mistakes that they were making. They're not making anymore. We need to add more games, otherwise this game is going to break. So that may be the reason, you know, that they're adding more games and clearly, this is a big advantage for Phil Ivey.
We're talking with Chad Brown here at the final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. Let's get a couple of plugs in here. I understand you're working on a book, and you've got a new endorsement deal. Tell us about those.
Yeah, there's a new company that's called Bust Out Poker, and the website's up, and they're already selling stuff from it. It's called bustoutpoker.com. And I just did the photo shoot for them, and really, they got some of the really coolest shirts. I mean, for Vanessa to endorse it and say, oh, I really like that shirt, means that it's really got to be good, because she's very picky when it comes to some of the clothes that I buy. So I really love the product, and I did a photo shoot for them yesterday, and they're putting in a full-page ad in Bluff Magazine, which will be in for the next 3 months during the World Series. And you know, they have a whole line of different things that are called bust out poker, but some real, they have shirts for both men and for women, sort of you know, a little bit on the lines of like Affliction and Ed Hardy. It's sort of like in between that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck with that. And what about the book?
Well, the book is something that is in the PokerStars VIP store. And it's strictly for amateurs. If you're already a decent poker player, this is really the ABCs of poker in, you know, how to get started. I wrote it with a German mathematician who's very well known in Germany. His name is Stefan Kalamar. And it's called Act to Win at Texas Hold'em Poker. And if you're just starting out in poker, I recommend you getting this. This is going to, between my collaboration with Stefan, you're going to get all the specific understanding of all the mathematical statistics for all the hands and hand ranges. And we talk a little bit about all the other games briefly, just to give you a little fill in on them.
Well, you know, we try to remember that the people who listen to this show are not all poker professionals or even poker semi-professionals. In fact, at lunch today, Dennis and I had a guy come up to the table who recognized Dennis, who plays every Friday in a garage game. 10 guys get together and they play limit poker. I think it's like $3 limit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are the kind of guys who love the game, they watch it, they listen to this show, they download our podcast, and they want to know what kind of books they can read. And some books, like Super System or some of the others, maybe over their heads, they need an entry-level book, and so yours sounds like a good one for them.
Yeah, that's what, you know what, there's so many great books out there that I respect, you know, obviously Doyle's Super System, and I love all of Dan Harrington's books, and there's a few others that I've read that I really think are great. So I felt, you know what, you know, listen, there's some great stuff out there. I don't, like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be giving that's going to be able to compete with that, but I didn't really feel like there was anything out there that's really for the very beginner. So, you know, Stefan approached me and said, hey, you want to do this book? And he approached me in 2007, you know, right after I won Player of the Year in 2006. And I said, sure, that makes sense. You know, something for a beginning poker player. I don't think there's anything that's really, you know, out there that's really for the, you know, someone who's just starting out who really wants to really understand how to play the game ABC in the correct way.
Okay. I'm going to switch this a little bit. We've had some really interesting stories. We had Barry Greenstein come here and talk about going through Illinois and around and the local poker playing there. We had Amarillo Slim on. He talked about almost barnstorming with Doyle running around. Some great stories on that. Your bio says you started playing poker in Italian cafes in the Bronx? Okay, that's got to be a little different.
Well, Dennis, I grew up in the Bronx, and the area of the Bronx I grew up in was actually a lot of Italian immigrants. And so there's pizzerias, Italian cafes. I'm half Italian, pretty much everyone in the neighborhood I grew up in was Italian. Their parents were, you know, from Italy, and some of the kids came over when they were 1 or 2 years old, and they, you know, so it was a very Italian culture. And in the Italian cafes, the owner of the shop would make extra money because the Italians love to play poker. And so a couple of nights a week, they would have in the back room of the Italian cafe a friendly poker game. Not nothing big, you know, like, you know, 5 and 10, something like that. And I wasn't playing, you know, initially, I wasn't playing like, I'm doing this to go make my living. I was playing for fun, socially, with my friends. And as time went on, you know, I realized that, you know, I wasn't just being lucky, I was winning most of the time. So when I moved out to L.A. For acting, I was fully prepared to go get a job as a waiter or bartender in between acting gigs. When I moved out there, I didn't know that there were legalized poker casinos in L.A. And so when I first went out there and I realized that, I was like, wow. I was like, maybe I should check this out. Maybe these guys play just as bad as the guys in the Italian cafe. And I figured I'd give it a shot and never look back.
That's fantastic. Chad, we really appreciate you coming on the show today. We will look forward to running into you and Vanessa at the World Series. I know that you and Dennis are both trying for your first bracelet, as is Vanessa. I'm actually really pulling for her, and here's why. Mike Matisau was interviewed last week, and he said that if three women win bracelets this year, he will run naked down the strip with a camera behind him.
Okay, no. I'm voting.
Well, you really must be a sick person if you want to see Matisau.
I don't want to see the video. Just want to have Matisau have to live that experience. In fact, he says there won't even be one woman who wins an open WSOP event this year. Now, Vanessa Selps just won the NAPT Mohegan Sun. Annie Duke won the NBC Heads Up. Liv Borey won the EPT San Remo. A woman named Daphne Turner just won her second circuit ring in New Orleans a couple of days ago. So please tell Vanessa for the fun of the poker world. Not that we want to see it, but we certainly want to have him experience it. She needs to get a bracelet this year.
Well, I think it's great that all of these women have been having. Annie Duke won the heads up. Vanessa, obviously, the year before, came in second place.
Yep.
In the NBC heads up. So I think it's great for poker that that so many more women are getting involved and actually. You know, Vanessa actually contributes in a big way. You know, she does a lot of, she does boot camps in general, but she does some boot camps for ladies only. She did one at the PCA when we were there this year, and actually she did it the morning of the ladies only tournament, which after she did the boot camp, Vanessa won.
Right.
So,
yep.
You know, all the ladies that were in that boot camp were probably like, wow, this stuff must really work. Vanessa just won it, you know, so.
That's great.
I'll tell you what, Chad, really appreciate you coming on here. By the way, you were runner-up at the NBC Heads Up there to Paul Wasika, if I remember right, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So. I think, I'm proud as a couple that that's something that, I think it's very interesting and unique that, you know, we both, Vanessa and myself, have a runner-up, situation with the NBC, which is very prestigious and playing against the best players in the world and heads up.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping I run into you again, hopefully at a final table, hopefully not before a final table, frankly, because I played with you a few times. I mean, you were Bluff Player of the Year for 06. You got a heck of a track record. I really don't like playing against you until we get to a final table. So.
Hey, Dennis, I got to tell you, I'm one of your biggest fans, and, hopefully, when you're at my table, if I don't win it, I'm always rooting for you. I'm a big Dennis Phillips fan. The guy, not only is a great poker player, but I really respect everything that he contributes to making the game better and to the fans.
Well, thank you, Chad, and it goes both ways.
Chad Brown joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. We'll be right back with John Pappas, Executive Director of the Poker Players Alliance.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on 3 continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
The way, this Saturday will be your last chance to come here to Harris St. Louis and qualify for the main event of the World Series of Poker. The final qualifiers will be this Saturday, the 22nd. At noon and 3 p.m., this is how Dennis got to the final table, to the main event, and eventually to the final table of the WSOP in 2008. $200 buy-in at noon and another session at 3. The people who win each of those tables, all you got to do is win your table. Then you go to the final table that night at 6 o'clock. If you win that, you got a $10,000 seat in the main event of the World Series of Poker.
Stop and think about it. You need to defeat 18 people.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's right.
If you can outlast 18 people, you can be going to Vegas.
And then you got to beat 7,000. But that's
a whole other
story. First, you got to qualify, and you can do that this Saturday. Also at Harris St. Louis, if you're a Doors fan, come see Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger, two of the original members of the Doors, with Brett Scallions from Fuel doing the Jim Morrison part as lead singer. That's a week from this Thursday, May 27th, in the Voodoo Lounge. Details are at harrisstlouis.com. Our guest today is John Pappas of the Poker Players Alliance. He's the executive director of this group. We're proud to have him as a sponsor of the show and happy to talk up their efforts as members of the PPA. We wanted to have John on here because 2 weeks from now will be the implementation date for the UIGEA, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. John, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. I'm almost about to jump on a plane and get down to the Harris there. Sounds like a great opportunity.
Well, we'd love to have you here. Come on down for Saturday. Tell us what's going to happen on June 1st. You were able to get this thing pushed back 6 months from last fall. But what's going to happen on June 1st when it comes to people who play online poker?
Well, that's, the $50 million question is what will happen?
$50 billion.
The PPA, though, I mean, in the interim, we haven't kind of thrown up our hands yet and say this date is inevitable for poker. What we've done is last month filed a petition with the Treasury and Fed that would seek to exempt poker, peer-to-peer style games, from the UGA regulations. Now, we've also had a number of members of Congress, about 30-plus members of Congress, who've weighed in support of that petition. It's the chances of the success of this petition are less than our odds were for getting the delay previously. But we're not giving up hope on that. So we're certainly going to fight till the date to make sure that poker is clearly exempted. But with that said, what is going to be the effect on the player? From what I'm understanding, it's not going to be as dramatic as some may have thought. If you've been following internet poker for the last several years, it seems like every 6 months there's some sort of disruption in the payment systems. And usually the sites find a way to work around that, and the players find a way to get money onto the sites. In the end, progress and technology always seem to win out. And I think what it may prove to do is on June 2nd and June 22nd and then July 22nd and then August 22nd, when really the marketplace hasn't changed that much, maybe Congress will start getting the idea that this prohibition idea simply isn't going to work, and they ought to try the alternative solution, which is what we've been advocating for a long time and which Dennis has come to Washington, D.C. and lobbied for, is why don't we license and regulate this?
No, I agree 100% with that. Do you see any, boy, I don't even know how to word this, pressure from the states on this maybe? There's a number of states that are trying to do something within their own borders. Is that going to have an influence on this?
It does. Certainly it's not going to have an influence on the June 1st deadline, but I think it does have an influence on how Washington takes this issue seriously. As you all may know, tomorrow there's a hearing in the House Ways and Means Committee to talk about the potential for revenue raised from Internet gaming. This is based on the McDermott bill that is kind of the companion legislation to the Barney Frank bill, which would seek to set up the licensing regime. And the McDermott bill that they're going to be talking about tomorrow in committee talks about, well, once you have it licensed, how do you collect the tax? How do you appropriately collect taxes from it? And I think that is being led because of, there's this kind of growing state interest in it. We've got New Jersey. We've got Florida. We've got California. Believe it or not, Iowa was talking about it. Texas last week, the Speaker of the House mentioned that maybe regulating this would be a way to raise revenue for the state. There's a lot of different states that are starting to talk about this as a revenue source. And I think that's going to maybe, push the federal government to acting quicker. And quite honestly, I think the Poker Players Alliance and I think poker players are better served, internet poker players are better served under a federally regulated marketplace than that which is regulated by individual states. Because if California goes and does this, then if you're a California player, today you're playing in a global marketplace. And if California regulated it and you have to play on a California regulated site, you're only going to be able to play with other people from California. And from a player's perspective, a consumer perspective, that seems like a step backwards, not a step forwards. We're concerned about what may be going on in the states, but we also recognize that it's also helping us at the federal level.
Is the objection from the people who are anti-gambling that they're against all gambling and they throw poker in with every other form of gambling, or is there a way to carve out a poker exception?
There is. I think we've done a lot of good work here in Washington to convince lawmakers and others that poker is different than the other games you're going to find in the casino. And the fact that people are playing poker on their computer is just simple evolution of the game from the kitchen table, if you will, to the computer table. And I believe that's resonating. I think you're going to see when Congress does this, it's going to be poker only. I don't think they're going to come out of the gates with a bill that is going to license and regulate casino-style games, at least not initially. I think the political palette would be for something like poker, and then after that, the government will be more convinced that this is an activity that can be regulated, and then other casino-style games may be added to that list. But in the short term, I think that poker is probably the best opportunity. Now, we don't have everybody bought into that, even Chairman Frank. On the House Financial Services Committee, his bill would regulate everything, and I don't think he's willing to back off that proposal until he realizes that he doesn't have the votes for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just have to see how that plays out on the House side with Chairman Frank. But I do believe that in the end, I think it will be a poker-only bill that goes.
Well, I don't like the idea of poker being lumped in with everything else, with slot machines, with blackjack, with bingo, with I don't care what. This is a game of skill. It's been proven it's a game of skill. We can prove again that it's a game of skill. Get out of our pockets and let us play this thing.
You know, we've got a president who's a poker player, and he's just nominated a woman to the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan, who's a poker player. Maybe we just need more and more poker players in power positions to finally get past this.
A platform on the Republican Party. You know, are you a poker player?
It's interesting. You ask somebody if poker's a game of skill, and if they say no, then you've met yourself a really bad poker player.
Okay.
because it's interesting that, you know, and I really truly believe that that poker is viewed differently in Washington than it was even 5 years ago, and I think that has a lot to do with, you know, great ambassadors of the game like Dennis, who come to Washington and meet with lawmakers and kind of give them the face of, here's a poker player. But obviously Dennis is a professional. He's a famous guy. What they're really hearing from is kind of the average Joes who live in their congressional districts, who say, hey, man, I like to pay a $2 sit and go twice a week on Poker Stars, and you're telling me I can't do that? This is ridiculous.
You're absolutely right.
And that is, and that, I think, is really where members of Congress are like, oh, wow, this, you know, this person goes to my church. This person, the kids go to my kids' school. And I think they had a misconception that everybody who was playing online poker was some sort of degenerate.
Yep.
And they didn't realize that they were just average Americans just like them.
That's a great point. We need every one of them to join the PPA. Go to thePPA.org and join the Poker Players Alliance. And, you know, call your congressman and let them know how you feel about this as well. John Pappas, the executive director of the PPA. Keep up the good work. We look forward to hearing about that carved-out poker exception sometime very, very soon. We appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks,
John. Thank you, guys. You have a wonderful day, and thanks for all your hard work as well.
Thank you. That's it for the show this week. Next week, main event prep with Kevin Schaffel and Bernard Lee and Dennis Phillips, three guys who know a little something about going deep in the main event of the World Series of Poker. I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening to 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, from Harris, St. Louis, and online at thechipleader.com.